Okay, let's continue. Next speaker, Jesus Tobala. Diffuse X-ray emission is a probe of stellar evolution.
Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear myself. So, so this is part of the work that I've been doing since a few years ago. My collaborators are Yo Hua Chu in Taiwan, Martin Guerrero in Spain, Jane Arthur in Mexico, Lydia Oskinova, and Hel Tot in Germany. So I just want to say that I will be mainly talking about single massive stars. And I will be talking about all this, the only objects that are detected in diffuse X-ray emission. This is a short outline of my talk. So I will give a brief introduction to massive star evolution, single massive star evolution, the hot bubble creation, and I'll go into the observations, and then I'll give you some remarks. So massive star evolution, it can go through different paths, depending on several parameters like rotation, metallicity, initial mass. But we can say that we have an O-type star, and then it goes through an eruptive phase, which could be red supergiant, luminous blue variable, yellow supergiant, and then finally can become a Wolf-Rayet. Or, as we heard in other talks, it could go from the O-type into the Wolf-Rayet phase. And this is, it has different timescales, but also the stellar wind parameters evolve with the star. So we will create shocks that it will drive, like, it will enrich the interstellar medium, and then it will create different nebulae around the stars. So since the 90s, it was understood that these stars evolved through this three-wind model. So what we have is that the O-type star, it generates an H2 region, and then a wind inside it, pushing outwards and clearing all the interstellar medium. So then it goes up dense ejection, any of these three phases, and then the Wolf-Rayet, again, starts carving and pushing this dense wind. It pushes it, and instabilities create, and then it breaks out after, I don't know, less than 100,000 years. So we'll have interstellar bubbles around all tight stars and Wolf-Rayet nebulae, which are this here. The hot bubble formation, so what we have is that we have a fast wind interacted either with a previously ejected wind or with the interstellar medium. So what we have is that an adiabatic shock wind is created. This hot is defined as the temperature of this cavity. It goes as the velocity square. So for typical velocities of hot stars around 1,000 to 2,000, we produce a diffuse and very hot bubble. Very low density, very high temperature. But this idea is very simplified, and it also depends on the configuration of the interstellar medium. For example, this is the simple scenario, like a star, everything symmetric and everything. But the star can also have a proper motion, or it can be interacting with a filament or the cloud that it was born in. Or in the cases of LBB stars, which have eruptions and bipolar flows, we will have different patterns around our hot stars. But still, we can expect X-rays in these phases, more or less. So since the 90s or the 2000s, there were still people asking, why do we not see X-ray emission or bubbles around O-type stars? And the only one, the exception, is the bubble nebula. This is the only one where we can see the effect of the wind. This is the wind-blown bubble, and all, everything outside is just photoionized material. So let me talk about this object. It has been mentioned several times. And then we were trying to search with Lida Oskinova for non-thermal X-ray emission related to the bow shock of this, because people in Argentina think that you compress the interstellar medium, then you accelerate the electrons, and you have non-thermal X-ray emission. But actually, we found out that this has thermal X-ray emission, and it's related to something close to the star. So to our help, it was Maki's model in like a few months before. So we can say that this is part of the hot bubble. So this is the only O-type star that has been detected in diffuse X-ray emission. And the explanation is because these instabilities mix the material, the hot bubble, and reduce the temperature to millions, one order of magnitude. So far, it's the only O-type star detected in X-rays. And I want to talk to you about how I started my career in astrophysics, like doing pretty images that probably you won't enjoy as much as I can do it in my screen. So first, I want to talk to you about Sharpless 308, which is the most extended Wolf-Rayet nebula. It has 40 minutes in diameter, and we think that it was formed through the evolution of yellow supergiant. It's the only way that you can push material so fast, so far away from the star. And we actually, as it's so extended, we use 4 XMM Newton observations in order to study the whole diffuse X-ray emission of this nebula. And this was, at the moment, the textbook hot bubble. So it's very round. Oh, just forget about this blowout here. But it's very round. And actually, the X-ray seems to be limb-brighten morphology, following inside the oxygen-free cavity, which is like the driving of the shock into the interstellar medium. So again, the temperature is one order of magnitude of those predicted by analytical models, and the densities are higher. So this means that some mixing is happening between the optical, the nebula, and the hot gas inside. And actually, in order to model the spectra, we need to use the abundances from the optical nebula. So this is actually the confirmation that in order to produce diffuse X-ray emission, you need to mix material. Then a few years later, I was very interested into this object because Sekov in 2014 published observations of this nebula, and there was something weird in his paper. So I decided to jump into the observations, and with the help of us amateurs, astronomers, we have very nice image in optical, and we see that this nebula is, which has been described as the evolution of an LBB star. So we see there are several filaments and a main bubble and some blisters here. So we actually, yes, we see X-ray emission delimited by the central bubble, and it seems to be some blister northeast of the bubble. One of the questions is, if the bubble seems to be so symmetrical, is why don't we have X-ray emission in this area? So Christina Kappa did a job for us a few years before, so she detected very strong molecular emission, so the X-ray emission there is absorbed by the molecular emission. So that's why we don't see emission there. And then again, the model of the spectrum is it needed optical abundances, and it's 2 million Kelvin. The density is enhanced. This nebula, the Crescent Nebula, NGC 6888 around Wolf-Rayet 136, is one of the most studied nebula in optical, radio, X-rays. Even the star is one of the most studied stars. It has been observed by almost every X-ray observatory that has ever been. The bad thing is that the previous generation had very low resolution, and the current one, Suzaku and Chandra, they did not map entirely the nebula. So this nebula has, you cannot see it here, but there's 2 caps, and there's a blowout going this side. So we used XMM Newton. We actually took us 4 years proposing XMM Newton observations until we got it. It was classified as C, and then it was done in during Christmas or something. So we do detect X-ray emission associated to the caps and to the blowout. They still you don't see here, but the X-ray emission is very nicely detected. So this is a comparison between the X-ray emission in blue with optical and infrared. So what we see here is that apparently this nebula is interacted with some kind of filament, like distributed here and some filament here. And the blowout is the result of the expansion of the nebula towards a low density medium towards this side. And so again, the general spectrum, like complete spectrum, give us this temperature, which is again, it needed optical abundances in order to model it, and higher electron density. But the observations were so good. We had so many photons, like 10,000 photons, that we were able to study the spectral differences between regions. So we actually, that's what we did. And then we realized that the caps have similar physical properties, like in the nitrogen, were higher than the optical nebula. And the other regions have nitrogen closer to the optical nebula. And actually, the temperature seems to be lower in this region and higher in this. So it seems like, again, the confirmation that mixing is, the efficiency is different within different regions because this nebula is interacting with the interstellar medium. Next one, who has not been published yet, and I'm working since like a few months ago, is NGC 3199 around Wolf Rayet 18. The star is here. So what we have is that the star has a proper motion in this direction. And we went into the ROSAT archive, and there were very amazing X-ray observations with ROSAT. So we decided to ask for XMM Newton. And we actually see some X-ray emission. And the nice thing about this nebula is that we see some spectral differences from the image. So you can see more greenish towards this side, which is higher than the energy than the red towards this part. And this is the distribution. So again, we model the spectra, different regions. So what we see is that the eastern part, which is the part lagging behind the star, needs nebular abundances. And the western part, it needs abundances closest to the star. So then again, my key model comes to the rescue. And we can explain this as the mixing of the optical nebula behind. And this part of the wind is dominated by the current Wolf Rayet wind. So we have four Wolf Rayet nebulae so far. They all have X-ray emission, even though there are around 20 ring nebulae around Wolf Rayet star that have, we only have four so far. We don't know why. We've been looking into the ROSAT archive. We see nothing around. So question is why? And the only thing that these stars have in common is that they have harbored more or less the same spectral type of Wolf Rayet star. And they all need nebular abundances in order to produce to explain this the spectra, and they're very soft. And the best observations of this nebula, which are these two, they give us like that there's some abundance variations in within the nebula, and it's actually pretty nice because they're very extended, and so the interstellar medium is giving us some feedback in the. Depending on where you're going, if the star is moving, if some interaction with the interstellar medium. So, and yet again, so this is the recently and the only bubble around the O-type star. But why, if the bubble nebula is the only one, has this very nice bubble, we can try to observe it in X-rays. So last year, I told this to you once. She said, I don't even submit the proposal. They won't give it to you. So 2 days after the astronomy picture of the day went in, and I was like, I'm doing it. And I took that picture, put it in a proposal, send it. And I got the data. Then again, the Hubble Heritage image. So we actually see X-ray emission from this. But it's a little bit puzzling because we don't see the pattern that what if the star is moving this direction, we don't see that the diffuse X-ray emission should be correlated towards the wake of the shock. We actually see that the X-ray emission is correlated to the brightest part of the nebula, so which is a little bit puzzling, and it could mean different things. For example, that maybe, I haven't modeled the spectra, but maybe there's non-thermal emission associated to the bow shock, or somehow the instabilities here, even though it looks very soft, are dominated the mixing of the material. So we still don't know. There's still work to be done in this. And that's it.
Questions? Tom.
So is that X-ray emission from the bubble nebula? Is it does it peak at the star or at that evaporating structure that I see?
This is the star, and exactly the rest is diffuse.
Yeah, but you see in the right, you see a little bit to the right?
This thing?
Yes, yeah.
This is outside the nebula.
It's outside.
It's a photo-evaporated global.
So it's really located on top of the star, whereas in your other beautiful Wolf Rayet bubble, it's really at the edges of the bubble. Mm. Oh, my God. The other thing is, you have Seda Ophiuchi, and that's the only O-type single star where you've seen X-rays. But this star is really, really close by. Does that mean that we just don't have the sensitivity nowadays with the currents?
Actually, we selected this nebula when we did this because it's one of the closest O-stars. And actually, if that will it will be easier to detect diffuse X-ray emission in the case that we were detected here.
But do models predict that the luminosity around these kinds of stars is just too low for current day?
So
if you were to put CDO Fuki at kiloparsec, would you still observe this?
Actually, Mach-E models predict luminosity of 10 to the 32 for this type of star. But in the luminosity is two orders of magnitude below that.
Mm-hmm.
So
what are the future? Do we have a telescope coming up, X-ray?
Athena, it's going to be a few years because the Japanese one, we lose connection with it, so we're going to have to wait a few years until sensitivity is increased by the new generation of X-ray satellites.
Yeah, I had a question. For one of them, you said the progenitor was a yellow hypergiant. Is that right? Supergiant. Why do you think it's a yellow supergiant?
So what we did in 2011, we fit our radiation hydrodynamic code with stellar evolution models from the Ginevra group. And the only ones that can reproduce such large structures is the 40 solar mass with rotation. So it never becomes a red supergiant. It's always in the yellow supergiant regime. So what you have is that the velocity in this phase, it could be 200 kilometers per second. So you create, before the Wolf-Rayet phase, you create a very extended shell, dense shell. And then when the Wolf-Rayet wind starts, you start sweeping up this material. So that's how you create this very extended material. It's the only way. If you don't have this kind of model with rotation, when the star becomes yellow supergiant, the material pile up very close to the star, and you disrupt the nebula.
Okay, but then you have to believe the models. So, I mean, it could easily be an LBV. You need a faster wind than a red supergiant. That's what you're saying.
Yeah,
I wouldn't trust the models to that kind of degree of accuracy because.
So I can blame the stellar evolution.
No, it's not blaming. It's just no one can create a model that accurate because we don't know the physics yet. But okay, other question. Yeah.
You mentioned that you need the mixing to have X-ray emission mixing. But mixing of what and why do you have do you need mixing?
So when you have the wind in the case of Wolf-Rayet star, so you have fast wind interacting with the slow wind. So in this wind-wind interaction zone, you create Rayleigh-Taylor instabilities. So first it could be Vishniac and then Rayleigh-Taylor, depending on the velocity of the dense material. So if you don't have in an analytical model or 1D model, you don't have this. So your hot bubble is always 10 to the 7, 10 to the 8. And in order to produce 10 to the 6 Kelvin plasma, what we see, you need to mix material either by thermal conduction or hydrodynamical mixing.
Other questions? Okay, let's go to the next speaker. Let's thank Jesus again.